As I walked past the chart table, I gave the barometer a friendly tap. Its blank face stared back at me insolently, and it remained stolidly on 1008. Just for luck, I wrapped the glass once more. The needle dipped half a point, which, at 11 at night, within 50 miles of the Greenland pack, was all that was needed to ensure that dreamland would be filled with hateful fantasies of disaster. The final decision about whether to try for Eriksfjord or work our way on to Newfoundland was taken in the middle of the afternoon watch next day. By now, the wind was hardening from a point east of south, and the swell was growing steeper. The barometer had fallen steadily all night and was still dropping. Directly to leeward of us, low down in the far distance, lay a remarkable bank of stable, dark grey cloud. John was staring at it through the binoculars. He handed them to me and pointed to an area to the right of the centre of the cloud. I adjusted the focus and found the place he'd indicated. There, jutting dramatically through the vapour, were two jagged, snow-covered peaks. I gazed at them in fascination till my eyes ached. Then I passed the glasses to Roz. "There they are," I said reverently. "That's the high land that Leif put over his sternpost when he sailed for Vinland. Bjarni probably raised those mountains when he finally came in down his latitude from the west." "God knows how many others. Never mind Leif and Bjarni," said Roz, irritated at my romanticising. "What's Tom Cunliffe going to do?" And she glanced meaningfully into the eye of the rising wind. There was no ice in sight, but right across the sky between us and the cloud that we now knew was hanging over the Greenland ice cap was a bright glare that had to be a reflection of some sort. "Do you suppose that's ice, Blink, John?" "I'm damn sure it is," he replied. "Cape Farewell's only just below the horizon, so there must still be plenty of pack coming round the corner." "Hell." "The wind's in the south," Roz offered heroically. "So we could always run up the Davis Strait, then perhaps the wind will have changed and we can work down the shore lead into Eriksfjord. How far did Tor Jakobsen say the pack would extend to the northwest of the Cape?"
200 or 300 miles.
"Ah, even with this wind, that'd be 2 or 3 days. Once we get near to the ice edge, we'll have to slow down. Then it'll be another 3 days to work through the growlers down the shore lead."
"What's a growler, Mummy?"
Hannah popped up, followed by Mike, who obscurely was carrying a large pipe wrench. "A growler's a baby iceberg. It floats right down in the water and you can't see it easily. They're very dangerous." "Ooh," squeaked Hannah ambiguously, and began conducting a one-child growler watch, staring into the freezing wind until her little eyes watered. "So there's no chance of pushing through to the fjords in much less than a week," John brought the meeting to order. "Then, if the ice stays where it is, we'll be another week to get out again. It could be nearly September before we make it even as far as Newfoundland." I was coming rapidly to a decision. "There's something else to consider," I pointed out. "This air that's blowing now is far colder than it ought to be coming from the south. It's flowing straight from the Gulf Stream, so it's chock full of moisture. You can feel the damp in it. It'll only take a degree or two drop in sea temperature and we'll have some champion fog. There's ice a few miles to leeward and that cloud over the landmass is really spelling out the message. If we press on to the northwest and head for the Davis Strait, we could find ourselves in a whole gale on a lee shore of uncharted ice with dense fog for a sideshow, because the water will be much colder than it is here once the ice gets really close." "What do we do then? Give it a miss?" Mike inquired expressionlessly. For a few seconds more I wondered, but the wind was breezing up every minute and the sky to windward was thickening noticeably. I looked once more at the ice blink and shivered. "Bring her up to the wind, John. Let's see if we can lay the Belle Isle straight." "That's it then, is it?" he asked. "Goodbye, Greenland." I examined his expression. The decision was a serious disappointment to me, and I'd no way of knowing how the rest of the ship's company would feel. I nodded glumly by way of response. "Well, thank God for that," he breathed. "I was afraid you wouldn't see sense." He brought Herter up to a southwest heading, and Mike hardened the sheets as the spray began to fly once more. Roz and Hannah retreated to the galley to brew the tea, and John steered comfortably into the steep seas. He sensed my need for reassurance. "Really, there was no other decision you could have made," he said. "It's going to blow like a bandit before midnight, and anyone caught down there in the ice could easily end up camping on an iceberg." "Don't worry about Patrick," he went on, voicing my innermost anxiety. "He'll be disappointed, like the rest of us, but he'll go along with the decision. The weather really never gave us a break." Just then, Herta butted her shoulder into a breaking wave and bitterly cold spray soaked us both with a sickening splat. I thought of Torstein Eriksson and his bride and what happened to them and began to count my blessings.